So Hannah, can you do paper five?
Thank you, yes. So moving to agenda paper five. This is about the inclusion of cash flows from collateral and other credit enhancements. Examples are insurance and financial guarantee contracts you might hold over your financial asset that you're assessing for impairment, and about how you take those cash flows into account in the measurement of expected credit losses. And in particular, in the submission, the submitter is asking what is meant by the term collateral and other credit enhancements that are part of the contractual terms. And this term comes from paragraph B5555 of IFRS 9, and it states that for the purpose of measuring expected credit losses, the estimate of expected cash shortfalls shall reflect the cash flows expected from collateral and other credit enhancements that are part of the contractual terms and are not recognised separately by the entity. We observe that this guidance should be read in the context of the definition of credit losses in IFRS 9, and this definition has a requirement that the cash flows that the entity expects to receive should include cash flows from the sale of collateral held or other credit enhancements that are integral to the contractual terms. Now, the term integral isn't defined in IFRS 9, but we note that where it's been used elsewhere, it's not necessarily limited to the implicit terms in the contract of the financial asset being assessed for impairment. As noted in paragraph B5555, though, obviously your cash flows you're taking from credit enhancements are those that are recognised separately by the entity, should not be included in the measurement of expected credit losses. And this is quite an important point, and it's to avoid double counting your cash flows, both in your recognition of your credit enhancement and also in your payment. So where we got to was that expected cash flows from credit enhancements that are integral to your contractual terms of financial asset but are not accounted for separately should be taken into account when you're measuring expected credit losses. And so, for example, we observe that it may be consistent to treat cash flows from financial guarantee contracts that are not recognised separately as integral to the contractual terms of the guaranteed financial asset when measuring expected credit losses. And we observe that this better reflects the economic perspective of your cash shortfalls if you do so. Be interested to hear what your views are on this particular issue. Thank you.
Helen. A subject dear to the heart of Canada.
Yes. Yes, and I was going to start off by saying that, you know, obviously this deals with including credit enhancement in the measurement, and we've already discussed significant deterioration in an earlier meeting and got to a place where you can't consider that credit enhancement in your significant deterioration. But the paper, I think, very clearly lays out that your expected credit losses or your cash shortfall are the difference between your contractual terms and what you expect to collect. And the standard does require that you consider credit enhancement and collateral in your determination of what you expect to collect. And as the submitter, I think, notes, this paper lays out, or this concept, you know, is consistent with what our practice is right now under IS 39. I think the paper provides some helpful clarification about what is meant to be integral to the contract, and therefore should be considered as part of your expected cash flows. And I think by not limiting the concept of what is integral to a contract as having to be explicitly documented in that contract helps us get to a better measure of expected losses. I think it's also important, as the paper lays out, that you're cautious about making sure that you don't double count by recognizing something on your balance sheet and including it in your expected cash flows. So I would concur with the position that's been laid out in the paper.
Good, thank you. And another Canadian voice, George?
Well, and I mean, I think although we obviously care about things like mortgage insurance, I think the bigger issue is actually parent sub guarantees. That is certainly a global issue. It's widespread, and are those things part of the contractual terms or not? So when I read this paper, I liked it, and I am glad that's what you guys think as well. I think it's a less literal reading of B5555, and that integral to the contractual terms is much broader than part of the contractual terms. And that if I read this correctly, and I perhaps like to make sure I do understand this, the only thing that would be excluded is stuff that's recognized separately. So the example of a credit default swap that is hedging a loan, that is done in practice, but because it's a derivative, it's recognized separately, therefore it cannot be part of the allowance calculation. If that is truly the only real exclusion here, then no matter when these enhancements are given, at origination, or if they're given long after origination and are simply a modification to the contractual terms, then all those things would be included. And so I think that is more what I think is done under IS 39 today, but I know in IS 39 in E.4.1 and E.4.8, they actually go to say that those kind of things, including collateral and guarantees, should be included. I think it would be an enhancement in the future to make sure that is very clear, and that perhaps B555 should be reconsidered, because if you read it in isolation, you can get to different places. And so I like the answer, but, you know, and I like looking at definitions, but then there was specific guidance offered about collateral, which I don't think is a natural extension of that. But I like the idea that more is included, and it's going to be much more consistent with the way we look at it from a risk perspective, as Helen said, what we expect we're going to collect. So maybe I'd ask the staff or the board if they agree that this is much, you know, what else is not included besides derivatives?
Well, I think it would be quite difficult to make a definitive no, nothing else is, you know, everything else is integral that's not accounted for separately, because you know, we don't know particular circumstances and facts of every specific case. So I wouldn't want to particularly make that. I mean, obviously we are taking a broader view as to what's integral, and there will be judgment that will be needed to made on specific cases depending on, you know, what's considered integral to that financial asset. I don't know if Sue's else to add.
Yeah, I think I hear you, and off the top of my head, that I think that what we were trying to get at was just excluding things that are otherwise separately accounted for, and that's what that B paragraph was really emphasising, which is probably why it's drafted a little bit more narrowly than we had maybe meant, because we were focusing on the double counting point and not so much on the other part of it.
We're focusing on the and,
yes,
and
exactly.
It's not separately identified.
Exactly, and so it was the double counting that we were emphasising. Maybe what we can do, subject to what Chris is going to say in the write-up, would be to make the point that what I think the definition's very much trying to get at with this integral concept, and it's a very conscious choice of words, and if you look at and contrast it, for example, with the way that we express how you look at solely principal and interest, it says the contractual terms. So we're consciously going more broadly than we are in other aspects of IFRS 9 because we were trying to get to a more economic picture of all of the things that you have got going on that are relevant to that calculation of expected credit losses, to make it get to a more economic measure, subject to not double counting. So maybe if we bring some of that out, it might help you with your point. Chris?
I can see both Jordan and Helen very much like this paper, and I imagine that's because perhaps in Canada there are some credit enhancements that maybe not
just our entire mortgage insurance system, but okay, yeah.
There are some credit enhancements not an explicit part of the terms, but you think should be considered integral, and so you see how the paper can get you to that conclusion. But you know, I'm reluctant to turn that into, well, everything that is not recognised separately is now integral. And I believe exactly the same issue exists today under IS39. Maybe some people interpret some of the implementation guidance a bit differently, but you have to consider whether something's integral. Part of that assessment does relate to is the enhancement accounted for separately.
Yeah.
And I think we would say, well, it's I think a judgment issue. I don't see any bright lines exactly here, apart from you can't double count. And I think some of the factors we look at, yeah, if it's an explicit part of the contractual terms, that would suggest to us it's integral. Other things we would look for are inseparability, of the enhancement, whether if you were to transfer the exposure, the enhancement would go with it, whether you in the market see the two traded as a package, whether there's a separate payment, perhaps to a third party for the enhancement, and that sort of ties into, is it not recognised separately? Because if you've got a separate stream of payments, that suggests you are going to have to do some separate accounting. What's the timing of the enhancement being added? Is it something that's there at the beginning of the instrument, or is it something that's added later? If it's added later, but and it looks integral, then maybe you're into modification sort of type issues. Who's provided the enhancement? If it's a related party, it tends to look more integral than if it's not a related party. And I think some of the more problematic ones are where we see enhancements that relate to a pool of assets, and you have some complicated terms, stop losses and limits. And it's very hard there to see that the enhancement is integral to any particular asset, because it's clearly sitting on the side and operating on a pool basis and looks therefore separate. So those are some of the things we think about today, and I think we think about those things in the same way under IFRS 9.
You do or you don't?
We do.
Yes.
Think about that.
So that's what I was just going to ask. Would a helpful thing, because I think this is true, would it be helpful to confirm that the in the same way that you would have had to make an assessment of whether you had something that was integral in assessing your expected credit losses, doing the calculations in 39, the same analysis would apply in IFRS 9?
Yes, that would be a help.
And to emphasise the double counting point.
Well,
would that be helpful to you?
Yes.
Because I think that's true.
But Chris brought up a point about modification. So I think if things are added after the fact, which I think is often going to be the case in parent sub guarantees. You know, a bank lends to a subsidiary, the subsidiary is doing fine, it runs into trouble, the bank wants to pull the loan, the parent says, wait a minute, I'll give you some more support. It is a modification, but the gross contractual terms of the loan haven't changed. All that's been added now is some certainty as to whether it's going to get paid or not. And so there is no modification gain or loss, I would hope. And that all we've really done is said that we have sort of affected what the LGD would be for that loan.
Yeah.
Now, I hope that's what people think about that, and it's not something where we think there's a modification gain or loss by the timing of when it's added. Well, I took away from your paper that the timing of when these things are added doesn't necessarily make a difference for credit enhancement, for guarantees.
Personally, I don't think it does, because let me take a simpler case. Let's assume that we had an unknown country where you had a series of mortgages and then the government changes its legislation and puts in place a guarantee scheme like you have in Canada subsequently. I don't know why I'd exclude that from my expected credit loss calculations on those mortgages just because they hadn't been in place from the start. And I'm not sure that Chris was saying black and white, it definitely can't be integral because it came in subsequently. It was just one thing you'd think of. But even though I think it's helpful for people listening to the tape to have heard what Chris's, you know, the sorts of things you think about when you think about whether or not something's integral in 39 land that may still be relevant to IFRS 9, because we haven't analysed it in the paper, I wasn't thinking of listing those things, but rather more generally referring to the type of analysis being similar. So I wasn't going to, you know, have a list that included needed to be in there from inception, for example.
But I think the only danger of referring back generally to saying, well, it's the same as IFRS 39 is not, I don't think everybody has quite the same view of 39. So some of us do think it's a question of assessing whether the enhancement is integral. I think there are others who look at some of the words in the implementation guidance and say, oh, anything, any enhancement is included, even if it doesn't feel integral.
That's why I'm sort of keen to emphasise it has to be integral. I don't think it can just be any old thing you can think of.
So I guess we do the integral analysis today under IFRS 39, and our intention, belief, was we'd do the same sort of thing under IFRS 9, but for others it might be a bit of a change.
Okay. So if I listen to all of this, perhaps the best way to approach it and see if you agree is that we emphasise the fact that we're not limited to things that are in the contractual terms.
Explicitly, yeah.
Explicitly, not explicitly included in the contractual terms. Okay. That we refer to the reference to integral in the definition and talk about the fact that you need to make a judgment to make an assessment of whether something truly is integral to the contract. We could refer to the fact that similar judgments, I won't say the same, but similar judgments were made under 39. And emphasise the caution on double counting. Would that be a fair summary and helpful?